Okay, welcome. My name's Divine. This is episode 250 of the Divine Intervention Podcast. And in this podcast, I'm going to be talking about a topic that has been heavily requested by many people, and it's on high-yield vaccines and vaccine schedules. And before I jump right into it, one thing I'm going to say is I'm not going to just read off a list of vaccines, because I know this thing is memory intensive. I know a lot of it is stuff you have to memorize, but I'm going to try to make integrations with the way they test it on exams. I'm going to, you know, give you a few rules here and there to help you remember things better. And I'm going to try to categorize things in a way that'll make it a little more memorable. And again, I'm not going to talk about every single vaccine. I'll talk about the vaccines that will probably represent like 99% of what you'd see on a test. And as a quick reminder, I do offer a course. It's a Step 2 CK course. It's 10 hours. We cover peds, surgery, IM, OB-GYN, psych, and neuro in a 10-hour period. I do that because it helps people also build like stamina for the exams. So we do from 6 to 10 a.m. Pacific time, take a 2-hour break, noon to 4 p.m. Pacific time, take a 2-hour break, and then 6 to 8 p.m. Pacific time and do a 2-hour break. I mean, and then we're done. And I ultimately end up covering probably, again, I usually use the number like 700 like concepts, but it ends up being a lot more than that. It probably is probably a little closer to like 1,000. Right? But we cover like, I use like clinical vignettes, case scenarios, concept topics, and we'll review the high yields of all those different things in one day. And the next one will be taking place on the 8th of August. So if that's something you want to sign up for, you can either send me an email through the website, or better yet, there's probably a better option. Just shoot me an email at divineinterventionpodcasts@gmail.com. The course is held via Zoom, you know, and payments, typically people make it either through Venmo or they can pay through our PayPal. But if you're interested, just reach out to me and I'll sign you up. You know, I sign people up as spaces are available. Once I run out of spaces, you know, then I'll just stop signing people up until I plan to do it another time. Okay, so let's jump right into it, right? So we know vaccines, right? Vaccines are important because they help prevent against infection, right? You use them to prevent disease, right? And the thing is, there are many types of vaccines, right? But for purposes of the USMLE exams, what are the two big ones you want to know, right? You want to know that we have live attenuated vaccines, right? So those live attenuated vaccines, these vaccines, right, they tend to basically be a bug that has been severely weakened, but it still has retains the ability to infect your cells. When it has the ability to infect your cells, you can generate a T cell response against it, right? So things like the MMR vaccine, the varicella vaccine, the intranasal influenza vaccine, those are live attenuated vaccines, right? And then we have the killed vaccines, the inactivated vaccines, right? So basically, you've pretty much destroyed the bug, right? But, you know, you still keep some antigenic parts on it, right, that can stimulate the immune system. The thing with these killed or inactivated vaccines is that they tend to generate more humoral immunity. They don't generate any T cell response, unlike the live attenuated that gives you a T cell and a humoral response, right? That's why usually those live attenuated vaccines, you can you don't usually need to keep giving booster after booster after booster after booster, right? Versus the killed or inactivated, where you have to like keep giving one booster after the other, and it kind of makes things a little harder to learn there. Because most of the vaccines that you see me say, oh, give this then, give this then, give this then, give this then, it's just vaccines that they are killed or inactivated vaccines, right? And then, I mean, I guess one group I can throw in here are the toxoid vaccines, right? So things, these are like, you take like a toxin, right, from the bug that can act on certain receptors in the body, right? The body can make antibodies against it, right? So I guess let me maybe give some examples and some special, like, common USMLE cases on these vaccines before we go into the vaccine schedules themselves, right? But classic thing they can give you on your test is they can give you a question about a person, like a newborn, right? They tell you that, oh, this newborn, his mom has like Hep B surface antigen that's positive, right? That's obviously not ideal, right? So typically for those newborns, you want to give them Hep B immune globulin, right? But at the same time, you will also want to give them the Hep B vaccine, right? Before a kid leaves the hospital, that kid should get the Hep B vaccine regardless of mom's status, right? But if mom has Hep B surface antigen positive, it'd be prudent to give the Hep B immune globulin. And again, give them, you know, in opposing extremities, right? Because you don't want to give the immune globulin and have it bind up the vaccine that you're giving the child, right? And then don't forget the rotavirus vaccine, right? It's a live attenuated vaccine, but it's a live attenuated vaccine with a twist, because typically as a general rule that you can take to the bank on MBM exams, live attenuated vaccines do not go to people that are less than a year old. But that rule does not apply to rotavirus, okay? That rule does not apply to rotavirus, right? Rotavirus is one of those live attenuated vaccines that actually goes to kids that are less than a year old. In fact, you give it at 2, 4, and 6 months, right? And one other thing I should say is they can give you an NBME question and say, oh, give you a question about a child that's getting the rotavirus vaccine. And then they can say which of the following is the most dangerous complication of this vaccine, right? Or the most likely, the most important dangerous complication of this vaccine. This will be intussusception, right? The rotavirus vaccine does in fact increase a person's risk for intussusception. And remember, there are certain people that already have a high pre-existing risk for intussusception that should not get the rotavirus vaccine, right? So common examples are, if a person has had intussusception already, right, they should not get the rotavirus vaccine. If a person has a history of Meckel's diverticulum, they should not get the rotavirus vaccine. If a person has a history of IgA nephropathy, they should not get the rotavirus vaccine. Or if they have something that is IgA nephropathy related, like Henoch-Schönlein purpura, they should also not get the rotavirus vaccine. Remember, rotavirus is the most common cause of diarrhea in kids, right? And then, some common inactivated vaccines you may see on your exam, right? So like the pertussis vaccine, like the Tdap, Dtap, whatever vaccine, right? Those are all inactivated vaccines. H-flu type B, remember H-flu type B, back in the days to cause epiglottitis, it's also an inactivated vaccine, right? Or the PCV13, right? The pneumococcal conjugate vaccine, right? The pneumococcal conjugate vaccine, PCV13, that's also inactivated. Or the one we give for polio, right? Polio is pretty much, it's not a thing in this country, right? Although it's still a thing in some countries of the world. It's an inactivated vaccine, right? The influenza vaccine, remember there are two kinds of flu vaccine, right? There's the one that you get intramuscularly every year, right? That's actually inactivated as well. But the live attenuated one is the intranasal one. It's the one you inhale as a mist, right? And then some classic, also your Hep A vaccine. The Hep A vaccine is actually part of the pediatric vaccine series. It's also, again, it's also an inactivated vaccine, right? The vaccine against like Neisseria meningitis, right? It's also inactivated. Remember, we don't have any vaccines against the Neisseria gonorrhea, right? But Neisseria meningitis absolutely has an inactivated, vaccine, right? We do have vaccinations against the Neisseria meningitis. And one key thing I think I want to mention, especially with the pneumococcal vaccines, right? There's PCV13 and there's PPSV23. I'll tease those apart in a bit, actually. So the PCV13 vaccine is a conjugate vaccine. You can see there's a C in it, right? Pneumococcal conjugate vaccine, right? Pneumococcal conjugate vaccine. So because it's a conjugate vaccine, it can actually give you a B and a T cell response. But PPSV23 is not a conjugate vaccine, okay? It's just a polysaccharide vaccine. It is not conjugated to anything. So it only gives you a humoral response. It does not give you a T-cell response. That's actually very high yield to know for exams, right? Now, the thing I will tell you is one rule that may make your life easy right off the bat is PCV13, you should always get that first before you get PPSV23. I'll say that again. So, and it's easy to remember because 13 comes before 23, right? If you look at the number line, right? So you always give PCV13 first before you give PPSV23. I feel like one prudent thing to do when you get these vaccine questions is just to do the process of elimination, right? If, for example, a person has not gotten the PCV13 in the Q-stem, and it doesn't make sense to pick an answer choice that involves giving them PPSV23 first, right? You can pretty much guarantee you're going to get those questions wrong, right? Now, the thing is, the PCV13, and again, I'll go into specifics in a bit, but the PCV13 vaccine is for everybody. Everybody should get the PCV13 at some point in their lives, right? But PPSV23 has some very specific indications. If you're over the age of 65, you should for sure get the PPSV23 vaccine. But again, you get that after you have gotten the PCV13 vaccine. So if you're over the age of 65, your case is sealed, right? You should get the PPSV23 vaccine, right? But if you're under 65, the PPSV23 vaccine is not required, right? It is not required, right? But for people under 65, there are certain populations of people under the age of 65 that should get the PPSV23 vaccine, right? And what are those people? Just think of the organs in the body that can have chronic disease, right? Like the lungs, the heart, the liver, the kidneys, right? If you're a smoker, if you have diabetes, right? Those people should get the PPSV23 vaccine, even if they're under the ages of 65, right? And then some other non-classic ones you may see on exams, right? Like if a person has like an implant in their cochlea, like they have like a cochlear implant, right? Or they have like chronic CSF leaks, right? So like a cerebrospinal fluid leak, right? Or if a person is immunodeficient for some reason, right? Like they have HIV or they have some kind of immunodeficiency disease like Bruton's or SCID or whatever, those people should get the PPSV23 vaccine, right? And also, if a person has no spleen, remember, if you have no spleen, right? So again, just so that you don't get bogged down in details here, just think of the organs in the body from head to toe, right? People can have chronic, like heart, like CHF, right? People can have chronic liver disease. They can have chronic kidney disease, right? They can have chronic lung disease like COPDers, right? And then think of the other classic chronic diseases, right? Diabetes, right? People that smoke, right? Smoking is kind of related to COPD, right? So it's easy to remember that. And then if you're immunodeficient in some bizarre way, right? So let's say you have HIV or any immunodeficiency disease, CVID, stuff like that, right? Or if you have no spleen, again, that's an immunocompromised state, right? Or if a person has like, again, the two like just weird out there scenarios, right? If you have like a cochlear implant, right? So this will likely be an older person on your test, or it can be a person with like, what is it called? With like Alport syndrome, right? Or a person that has a CSF leak, right? Again, those are rarer scenarios on exams, but they do certainly show up, right? So again, hopefully that kind of clears things up for you, right? So some other, I guess, so I think those are kind of like the big things I want to mention. And again, another thing I think I should mention is, again, live attenuated vaccines. If you're pregnant, you don't get them, right? If you're pregnant, you should not be getting a live attenuated vaccine. If you are less than a year old, you should not be getting a live attenuated vaccine, right? But again, remember, there's an exception to that rule. That's the rotavirus vaccine, right? That's the rotavirus vaccine. So if you're pregnant, if you're less than a year old, if your CD4 count is less than 200, you do not get any live attenuated vaccines on exams, right? Again, super high yield to know this stuff, right? So let's kind of talk about the vaccines in kids, right? Let's talk about the vaccines in kids. So what is the rule I would like to teach you for how to remember the vaccines in kids? This is an approximate rule, but it works a lot. It's an approximate rule, but it works a lot. Most kid vaccines, so these are two high yield rules to keep in mind. Most pediatric vaccines are at least three doses. It's not always true, but it's true like 80 to 90% of the time, right? So it's a rule you want to remember, right? Most pediatric vaccines have at least three doses. That's one. Two, most pediatric vaccines are given at 2, 4, and 6 months of age. So remember that as the 2, 4, 6 rule. Just take consecutive even numbers, right? And then one way you can say, oh, okay, so which vaccines do not obey that second rule I mentioned? Your live attenuated vaccines, which I've already mentioned in the beginning, right? Remember, your live attenuated vaccines are like your again, with the exception of the rotavirus vaccine, right? But the intranasal influenza vaccine, the MMR vaccine, the varicella vaccine, right? That's an example. Those are all examples of live attenuated vaccines, right? Live attenuated vaccines. Okay, so again, don't forget, three doses minimum, 2, 4, 6 rule, right? So let's go into some specifics, right? So like, for example, the Hep B vaccine, right? So the Hep B vaccine, this one is kind of unique. You need to get it before you get out of the hospital. Basically, the first day of life, the kid is going to get the first dose, right? You're going to get three doses total. First one is, you know, the first day of life. Second one is like, you know, within the first 60 days, right? And then the third one is within the first 6 to 18 months, right? So again, first dose, first day of life. So remember, first dose, first day of life, right? Second dose, around 2 months of age. So two months of age, right? Basically, before you hit 2 months of age, you should get your second dose. And then your third dose, right, is between 6 to 18 months of age. If you notice, third dose is the number 3. 3 times 6 is 18. So third dose between 6, right, to 18 months of age. So you take 3 times 6, 18. That kind of helps you remember that, right? And then the rotavirus vaccine, this is an awesome one. Obeys that second rule perfectly. It's a three-dose vaccine and is given at 2, 4, and 6. 2 months, 4 months, and 6 months of age, right? And then the DTaP vaccine, right? The DTaP, so diphtheria, tetanus, and acellular pertussis. This one actually has 5 doses, and then there's some extra information to know. I'll say that again. 5 doses and then some extra information to know. But again, guess what? The first 3 doses of... And the thing is, if you know the first 3 doses, you'll probably be able to get most of these questions right already. The first 3 doses follow that 2-4-6 rule that I keep harping on. 2 months for the first dose, 4 months for the second dose, 6 months for the third dose, right? The fourth dose, you give it like right around like 15 to 18 months of age, right? And then the fifth dose, you get it like between 4 to 6 years of age, right? So 2-4-6 rule for the first 3 doses. Fourth dose is between 15 to 18 months. Fifth dose is between 4 to 6 years, right? And then the thing is, when you get older, when you get to your adolescent years, you get the Tdap vaccine, and then you get a TD booster every 10 years. I'll say that again. When you hit, so notice the first five doses are before you hit 10, right? Again, 2, 4, 6 for the first three doses, 15 to 18 months for the fourth dose, 4 to 6 years for the fifth dose, right? And then once you enter your adolescent years, you get the Tdap vaccine. And then you get one Tdap, and then you get a TD booster every 10 years, right? And then the H-flu type B vaccine. The H-flu type B vaccine, again, this is three doses as well, right? This is three doses. And fortunately for you, the first two doses obey that 2-4 rule, right? So first dose at 2 months, second dose at 4 months, right? And then the third dose, you get it between like 12 to 15 months, right? So once you hit a year old and, you know, up to a year and 3 months, you get the second dose, right? So again, I feel like if there's one key thing you want to commit to memory with these pediatric vaccines, 2, 4, and 6, right? And then the PCV13 vaccine, right? The PCV13 vaccine, again, it's four doses, right? It's four doses, right? The PCV13 vaccine is four doses, at least in kids, right? And again, the first three doses, guess what? It obeys the what? The 2-4-6 rule. It obeys the 2-4-6 rule. And then the fourth dose, you give it between 12 to 15 months, okay? Between 12 to 15 months. And then the polio vaccine, guess what? The polio vaccine is four doses. But surprise, surprise, the first three doses obey what? The 2-4-6 rule. Are you seeing a common theme here, right? The first dose is at 2 months, second dose is at 4 months, third dose is at 6 months, although you can stretch it up to 18 months, right? And then the fourth dose, remember the fourth dose between the ages of 4 to 6, between the ages of 4 to 6. And then the influenza vaccine, this one you should know, right? You get it every year as a kid, right? Although you can get it at less than 6 months as a kid, even if it's the intramuscular one, right? You get it every year. And then obviously, right, if a kid is less than a year old, you're not going to be giving them the intranasal one, right? That kind of violates a rule that I've mentioned initially, right? And then the specialized live attenuated vaccines, right? Like MMR, varicella, right? So like MMR, varicella, I want you to group all these two together, right? They have the same vaccine schedule. MMR, varicella, they both have the same schedule. The first dose, again, obviously is not going to be less than a year of age, right? Because of a rule I've talked about. The first dose is between 12 to 15 months. And then the second dose is between 4 to 6 years. That's it, right? So MMR, varicella, they have the same vaccine schedule, right? 12 to 15 months for the first dose. Second dose is at 4 to 6 years, right? And the thing is, the Hep A vaccine also kind of follows a similar rule, even if it's not live attenuated. Within the second year of life, just remember, you get two doses for Hep A. The first dose is within the second year of life, so you can give it at less than 12 months. And then the second dose, you give it 6 months after the first dose, okay? So the first dose within the second year of life, and then the second dose, you give it like 6 months after the first dose, right? And then as an adolescent, right, again, so typically, again, that Tdap, that first Tdap that you get, again, I said, you get it as an adolescent, usually between 11 to 12, you get it. And then you get a TD booster every 10 years, right? And then another classic one that you may see in, in that children, like from 10 to 18 age bracket, is the meningococcal vaccine, right? The meningococcal vaccine. The way I just think about it is a vaccine you get when you're about to enter, like, so I didn't go to, like, my middle or high school or anything in the US, right? So let me just give the actual age. But, you know, between 11 to 12 years of age, that's where you get your first meningococcal vaccine, right? And then the second dose, you get it at 16, right? You get your second dose at 16. So your first dose, 11 to 12 years of age, second dose at 16. And again, please do not forget, the HPV vaccine, you can start giving it as early as the age of 9, right? You can give it as early as the age of 9 on an MBM exam. I mean, in some populations, they extend it all the way to the age of 40, right? But, you know, for the most part, 9 to 26 is probably a nice safe answer to keep in mind for exams, right? Nice safe answer to keep in mind for exams. And remember, I feel like I should mention this, right? But there are some specialized vaccines in older people, right? Like probably the big one to remember is like the zoster vaccine, right? The zoster vaccine, you get it when you hit the age of 50. Remember, the varicella vaccine is not the same thing as the zoster vaccine. The zoster vaccine, you get it when you hit the age of 50, right? And you get two doses, right? About 6 months apart, roughly. Although it can be as low as 2 months apart. But, you know, the zoster vaccine, you get it when you hit the age of 50. You don't get it less than that, right? And again, I've talked about the PCV13. I said PCV13, everybody gets PCV13. Everybody gets PCV13, right? And remember, you always get PCV13 before you get PPSV23, right? And then I said PPSV23, is not necessary for everybody, right? If you're over 65, everyone over 65, forget it. If you're under 65, right, but over the age of 19, right, again, chronic disease of the major organs in the body, immunodeficiency disease, cochlear implant, CSF leak. That's the big way to remember that, right? And then just some special situations, I guess I should kind of mention, right? Like if a woman is pregnant, right? At every pregnancy, you're actually supposed to get the Tdap vaccine. I'll say that again. At every pregnancy, you're supposed to get the Tdap vaccine. You're supposed to get it within 27 to 36 weeks, right? Within 27 to 36 weeks. I'll say that again. Within 27 to 36 weeks, right? And then, you know, if you have no spleen, right? Like sickle cell disease person, or person had mono, they didn't listen to the doctor, they went and played basketball and then they got smashed in their spleens, right? Those people are going to need vaccination against those shin organisms, right? Like strep pneumo, H flu, Neisseria meningitis. And their strep pneumo, right, because they have no spleen, that's a somewhat immunodeficiency state, they're going to get PCV13. And even if you're less than 65, they're going to get PPSV23, right? So strep pneumo, H flu, Neisseria meningitis, right? Strep pneumo, H flu, Neisseria meningitis. And the thing is, typically, if a person gets the PCV13 vaccine, you know, you can wait a couple of months, and then after that, you give the person the PPSV23 vaccine, right? Give the person the PPSV23 vaccine. At least, you want to wait for at least 2 months before you give the PPSV23, right? Before you give the PPSV23. And again, don't forget, right, if a person has sickle cell disease because they have no spleen, right? In addition to all this stuff, right, those people also need to be on a penicillin or amoxicillin every day until they hit the age of 5, right? Until they hit the age of 5. For the most part, that's just a nice, safe general rule to keep in mind. And again, remember, if you have HIV, if your CD4 is less than 200, you're not going to be getting any live attenuated vaccines. Some classic things they can give is, if a person has an egg allergy, is there some kind of vaccine you want to avoid? You want to avoid the yellow fever vaccine, right? But the MMR vaccines, the varicella vaccines, all those things, those are fine even in people that have egg allergies. Okay. So I think those are the big things I kind of want to talk about. I think these are the big things I want to talk about. And I guess I want to talk about a life lesson right now, actually. My life lesson is, let me not forget my format, right? So I don't forget, right? So please, I have a YouTube channel. It's called Divine Intervention Podcasts and Videos. Please subscribe to that. I have many of my podcasts on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Play. Please subscribe. And then I have a website, right? Divine Intervention Podcasts with an S.com. And again, if you have any questions on my tutoring services or my classes, either send me an email through the website or, you know, shoot me an email at Divine Intervention Podcasts with an S at the end at gmail.com, right? And then my life lesson for today is going to be on the value of planning, right? Planning. I mean, you've heard this, right? If you fail to plan, you plan to fail. In fact, my pastor in church this morning said that, if you don't plan, you'll very likely not get to your destination in life, right? It's almost like traveling without some kind of itinerary, right? You're like, I'll just see where the plane takes me. They probably won't even let you on the plane in the first place, right? So it's very important to plan. When you plan, like, in fact, I tell people this, the easiest way to deal with challenging situations in life is to come up with a plan. That is one thing I do with many people I tutor, right? I tutor them and I make a plan with them. When I make a plan and they follow that plan diligently, they almost always come out on top on the other end of things, right? I mean, there is even a part of the Bible that says to write the vision. I think it's in the book of Habakkuk, chapter 2 or something like that. I think it's Habakkuk like 2 verse 3 or something like that. Look me up on that. But it says write the vision, make it plain, right? So that the person that writes it will be able to run with it, right? If you know that, I want to take step one and I want to get this particular score, your planning for step one does not start a month before your test. No, it should start from the time you begin med school, right? Or you want to succeed. Like when you see people that are poised for success in med school, those are people that come into med school with a plan, right? I'm not saying you shouldn't enjoy your life. You should enjoy your life. I enjoy my life, right? I mean, thank God the NBA is coming back, so I'm going to watch my Lakers starting this Thursday, right? But it is extremely important. It is absolutely, absolutely important. Absolutely important to go through life with a plan. Your step one, your step two, CK. Even the way you round on patients. I've talked about this many times. The way you round on patients, the way you see your patients, the way you write your notes, the way you do this. If you want to get married, right? Marriage is not all about, I love you, I love you, I love you. No. You need to plan, right? Again, a marriage that is successful is a marriage that starts with a plan. Like, oh, what are we going to do with our kids? How are we going to raise them? What schools are they going to go to? Or even if you want to be financially independent in life, because this is unfortunately a problem many physicians run into, right? They see, oh, we're making a ton of money. They buy huge homes, huge cars, get into debt. No plan for life because they're like, oh, at the end of the month, I'm going to get this huge paycheck. The thing is, people do not become financially independent by mistake. People become financially independent because they have a plan for their financial futures, right? So that's the thing. Like, you just need to plan. Just plan. And planning, it's one of these things where it's a small intervention, but it can have profound benefits in your life. And not planning is one of these things that, oh, it's a small sleight of hand, but it can have profound consequences for a person's life, right? So the thing is, you set yourself up for success. You put yourself in a position to succeed when you make a plan, right? When you make a specific plan. And the thing is, when you're making plans, try to not make plans that have too many moving parts, right? Like, for example, when I tutor people for Step 2 CK one-on-one, right? We make a plan that involves content review, like learning new content, reviewing that content, and doing questions. That's it. I don't tell them, oh, do these 10 resources, right? No, we don't do any of those things. Because those plans that have too many moving parts, they are less likely to get accomplished, right? So again, and don't just imagine these plans in your head. Just kind of write it down, right? Write it down. So that's the thing, like, this is insurance against tough situations in life, right? If you're about to start residency and you're scared, or about to start a new rotation and you're scared, just plan for it. If you plan, you are setting yourself up for success from the get-go, right? And I mean, obviously for me, I mean, as some of you already know this, you know, I'm a Christian. So, you know, I pray, commit things into God's hands. And, you know, again, things usually go pretty well for me. So again, but it's very important to plan, right? You can pray all you want. You're not going to get any result if you also don't put in some work, right? Faith without works is dead, right? Oh, I believe I'm going to crush my exams. I believe I'm going to get a 270 on step one. Make all the positive confessions you want. But if you do not add works to that faith, to those positive things you're saying, guess what? You're not going to get any results, right? You're not going to get any results. So again, just kind of keep those things at the back of your mind as you go through life. So thank you for listening to my podcast, and I hope you find this vaccine schedule podcast to be high yield. Thank you. God bless you. I'll see you next time.